Hello, hello. I like it. Enthusiastic. That was actually better than I expected. I think half of the energy was coming from Claire, as usual. Happy New Year's. It's will I j should I just keep on saying stuff and then you repeat it? Should I s you're that's where you say should I the there we go. Dumb joke. Guess what, guys? You know what's exciting? We're finishing our series in the book of Acts. Do you know how long we've been in this book? Not quite. We started this series on January 31st of last year, and we've been going through it for that enormous period. We've been going through it for a while. And I hope that this message will do a couple of things. We'll see if we can get to them all. Probably don't have enough time. Hopefully, we can recap where we've come from. We can see the entire story of the book of Acts as a whole, and we can get some takeaways from it. And then, hopefully, we'll be able to look at what the book of Acts is leading us to do. Okay? If we read through the entire book of Acts without anything in the way we think, anything in the way we relate to God, anything in the way that we witness to people, without any of that changing, then something has gone wrong. And I willingly admit it might be our preaching, but it also might be something with you. Maybe you were asleep the whole time. So hopefully we're going to come out of the sermon and we're going to be excited to witness, okay? Because that is one of the largest themes of the book of Acts. So we're going to be looking at, again, like a couple of weeks ago from chapter 26, we're going to be looking at how Paul approaches witnessing. Okay? So again, like last week, this is about evangelism. And I want to work with some of the misconceptions we might have about evangelism. Okay? So why don't we go ahead and bring up the PowerPoint? So the main thing, the title, Patiently Sharing the Heart of God. And I want to emphasize one word, patience, okay? We're going to be looking at how Paul exhibits patience in the way that he relates to the people he witnesses to. We're going to be looking at how God has shown tremendous, tremendous patience in faithfully waiting for people to respond to him. Patience is key, okay? And the reason I want to emphasize that word in particular when it comes to evangelism is because I don't know, there are few things our culture is worse at than patience. So let me say that again. There are few things our culture is worse at than patience. Do you guys agree with me? So let me give you one illustration of that. Raise your hand if you have Amazon Prime. Do you guys know what Amazon Prime is? Does anyone remember what life was like before Amazon Prime? It was unbearable, right? I would order something online, and I have to wait like an entire week or even longer for my package to come. With Amazon Prime, you get free two-day shipping, right? So if I order it today, it comes on Tuesday. And that Amazon Prime is something that I don't think I could survive without. But that's what's crazy. No. What's crazy is Amazon is getting even faster in delivery, right? You can choose an order where you get one-day delivery. How mind-boggling is that? I can like type on my computer, and the next day a package will arrive that I wanted. It's like magic, right? I throw my wishes out to the universe, and in a day, a single day, a package arrives at my doorstep. So over the holiday break, I've used Amazon Prime a lot. I've gotten a lot of books. I got a lot of, I, for some reason this year, I bought a lot of shoes. Shoes for other people, shoes for me. And then the thing I'm most excited about getting was I just got this really cool jump rope. So I've been doing weightlifting with Michael and Orion and at Operation Dawn, actually. And this jump rope is like super duper cool. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but you can adjust it very easily. It's like really fast, so you can do a lot of jump roping. It's great. But here's the crazy thing. Amazon has gotten even faster than one-day shipping. Did you know that? Did you know that there's a thing called Amazon, what's it called? Amazon Prime Now, right? Did you guys know that that existed? It's like I don't even know how it works. I've never used it, but I was looking at Amazon, and at the top of the homepage, it's like Amazon Prime Now. Order like champagne, and it'll come in the next 2 hours, 5 hours. I don't know, and that just boggles my mind, right? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine how long people used to have to wait to receive mail? Do you remember, like, in the Wild West times, there would be, like, the Wells Fargo, the Pony Express, like, they would put your mail in a bag, and they would put the bag on a horse, and the horse would have to ride all the way across the country to deliver your mail. And then for the person to respond to you, they would have to put the mail on the horse and then all the way back. But now there's Amazon Prime Now. And I think what's really interesting about this is this really applies to like every single facet of our lives. And often we're not even aware of the air that we're breathing when it comes to how instant gratification culture we are. And I mean, a lot of people say, you know, we're all into instant gratification, and that's true. And in a sense, it's obvious, but I don't know if we understand how powerful and how deeply rooted that instinct is. And when we buy into this culture, when we buy into this value of instant gratification, we become very, very bad at patience. And this will hinder and damage our ability to share the gospel, because people are not Amazon Prime Now. People do not work like that. Change in people's lives never, ever happens instantly. Change in people's lives takes a long time. Sometimes it's faster, sometimes it's slower, but it's a process. And to treat people with respect in the way we witness to them, we need to understand this truth. God is patient. God was patient with us, and we must be patient with people as we share our faith with them. So we're going to go ahead and look at the last chapter of Acts, Acts chapter 28. We've gone through 28 chapters in the book of Acts. And I'm actually skipping a couple of chapters. The thing I love about the book of Acts is there are so many wild stories. And I really hate to skip the last couple of chapters, but so I'm going to briefly summarize what happens in chapter 26, 27, and the beginning of chapter 28, because we're basically only going to look at the end of the chapter. So does anyone remember where Paul is right now in his journey? Nope, didn't think so. Oh, Brad, what you got? Caesarea? Actually, I don't know. Do you know where he's going? That's a better question, a better way of putting the question. He's going to Rome, right? Does anyone remember how he's getting there? In chapter 26, he was on trial, and he decided to appeal to Caesar. Now, as I explained last time, that's kind of like taking your case to the Supreme Court, right? There are all of these different courts. There's like, where's Lenser when you need him? I don't know anything about the legal system. But there are different courts, and there are the smaller local courts, and then you get to the larger district or circuit courts or whatever, and then you get to the Supreme Court. And Paul is appealing to Caesar, meaning he wants his case to be decided on. He wants his sentence to be passed by Caesar. And that means he has to go to Rome. So he's on his way to Rome. And chapter 27 is a really, really exciting chapter. You should read it. He's on his way to Rome with a bunch of soldiers and sailors. There's a shipwreck. They crash. They're like in the water on the planks of their destroyed ship. They float to an island. And when they get to the island, the very first thing that happens is Paul gets bitten by a snake, right? It's like as if things weren't sucky enough. My ship got wrecked. I was in the water. I'm cold. I'm hungry. And I got bitten by a snake. But the miraculous thing is this whole shipwreck narrative is all about God's miraculous deliverance of Paul. And then when they get to the island, he gets bitten by a snake, and then nothing happens. There are all of these natives who see Paul get bit by a snake, and they're like, wow, that guy must have been cursed, because like he survived the boat ride, but then he's going to die after getting bitten by a snake. But then nothing happens. And they're like, whoa, what's the deal with this guy? And then he goes and heals one of the tribe leaders, the most important tribe member, the father of that guy. And it's really crazy. All of this crazy stuff happens, but we have to go ahead to where we are now. And this is Paul finally gets to Rome. We've been waiting for the entire book for Paul to get to Rome, for the gospel to spread from Jerusalem to Judea and Samaria to the ends of the earth, and here we are at Rome. This is the ends of the known earth. Does that make sense? This is like the farthest point that people in Jerusalem would have known about during this time. So let's go ahead and get into the text. I'm going to read from chapter 28, verse 23, and I want you to look at the way Paul witnesses. So let's go to 3 points. Actually, can we go to the 3 points? I'll go. So the first thing I want you to know is Paul persuades, and we're going to be specifically looking about the way that Paul persuades his audience. Second thing, Paul shares what he knows, God's heart. And this is a throwback to last week, or to the last sermon in Acts 26, where we were talking about sharing with authenticity. You can only share what you know or have experienced of God. And then thirdly, Paul welcomes all. And in each one of these arenas, we're going to see patience come up in different ways. Paul is patient in the way he persuades. Paul shares what he knows, God's heart, and God's heart is patient. And then thirdly, Paul welcomes all, and he's patient about the way that he receives people. Okay? So let's go ahead and get into it. This is Acts chapter 28, verse 23. So real quick, little context. Paul arrives in Rome. Paul is still he's kind of like on probation or house arrest. So in verse 16, there's a soldier guarding him, and this soldier follows him around. And then at the end, it says that Paul, verse 30, he lives 2 years at his own expense. So he's in his house, and there's a soldier guarding him. He can't go anywhere, but people are able to come to him. Why was I saying that? Oh, giving context. That's right. So giving context, Paul is in Rome, and he calls together all of the local Jewish leaders, and he wants to talk to them. Okay? We can see Paul's heart for his people, the Jews, in the way that he seeks to meet with them. He seeks to share the gospel with them, and then they actually respond by asking him. They want to know what his message is. And so this is verse 23. When they had appointed a day for him, they came to him at his lodging in greater numbers. So again, he's at his lodging, and they have to come to him because he's under house arrest. From morning till evening, he expounded to them, testifying to the kingdom of God and trying to convince them about Jesus from both the law and from the prophets. So let's look at some observations we can make about Paul's persuasion. How does he try to persuade them? The first thing, from morning till evening, he expounded to them. And I love this. This is really funny to me. Paul, one thing we learn about Paul from the book of Acts is he loves to talk. He is extremely long-winded. And there's this one time where he's giving this sermon, and he starts in the daytime, and it goes for so long into the middle of the night that there is a young man sitting on the roof, and he falls off to his death. So it's like Paul has preached for so long that this guy falls asleep, and then he dies. And the crazy thing is he's Paul, so he raises him from the dead. And that's really crazy. But we learned something there, right? How many of you could talk from morning till night without stopping? Anyone? Maybe Eric? Sophia? I don't know. Oh, it runs in the family. No, just kidding. But he talks for a really long time. He talks for a really long time. And here we see that he talks from morning till evening. Now, when we approach evangelism, what are your expectations going into it? So let's say you meet a friend and you're going to share the gospel with them. What are your expectations for what that conversation will look like? How long do you think it will take for that person to become a Christian? What kind of things will you say to them? What kind of things will you talk about? If you're anything like me, a lot of my approach to evangelism growing up, a lot of my expectations based on what people had told me, or even just the kind of things that I thought about, I thought evangelism would look like this. Sharing my faith would look like this. You are a sinner in need of salvation. Jesus died on the cross, rose again, so you can be saved, have a relationship with God. Are you Christian now? I mean, think about it, right? When we say we want to share the gospel, we boil it down to a formula so that we can most quickly communicate the most important information, right? And I don't think that's necessarily bad, but a lot of the times it is, okay? Do you know why? Because we're not giving people time to actually understand what we're saying, right? So let's pretend for a second you have never gone to church, and maybe this is true of some of you right now. You've never gone to church, you have no exposure to Christianity, and someone gives you that spiel. Like, you are a sinner in need of salvation. I don't know what sinner means. I don't know what salvation means. Jesus died on the cross and rose again so you can go to heaven. What does him dying have to do with me going to heaven? I don't understand what's going on. You can have a relationship with God. Are you Christian now? Now, when we use that formula, what we want more than anything is for them to say yes. And I think part of that is a really good desire because we want to share our faith. We want people to know God who we know because he's life-giving and he's good and he's loving. But are we allowing people to have time to actually understand who he is? Are we allowing people the time to investigate? Or do we just want to get it over with? And there are a couple of, reasons why we are so, let me use a little illustration for now. I want to call this microwave evangelism, okay? So this is, again, our short attention span, instant gratification. You guys know what a microwave is, right? Let me ask you this. How much longer does it take to cook with a conventional oven than a microwave? A lot longer, right? And when we put something in the microwave, we want it like 30 seconds in, beep, 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 take it out, it's done. And when we evangelize, often we do the same thing. We just want people to be done. We want them to be, we want them to become a Christian, and we don't give them time to actually investigate for themselves. And Paul doesn't do that. From morning till evening, he expounds to them. So, and this actually extends not only to evangelism, but to our Christian life as a whole, right? So if you think about microwave evangelism, where we take shortcuts in the way we present the gospel, we just want people to say, yes, we want people to say the prayer, we want people to say, yes, I became a Christian, even if they don't understand it. In the same way, when it comes to Christianity as a whole, our relationship with God, we want shortcuts, right? We often aren't willing to do the hard work, in a sense, of asking difficult questions, of actually following where our questions lead us, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's difficult. A lot of the questions that the youth ask are really, really great, and it shows me that they're not engaged in microwave Christianity. They ask hard questions like, why does God in the Old Testament seem to be different than Jesus in the New Testament? Is God in the Old Testament a God of violence, but then God in the New Testament is a God of love? Is God schizophrenic? Or how do I hear God? Why doesn't God speak to me in the way that I hear some people saying, right? There are a lot of good questions that we can ask. Is God really going to send people to hell, like people who don't know Jesus? How can he do that? What about all the people of all the other different religions? What about all the people who existed before Jesus? Is God really going to send them all to hell? Is he really a God of love? These are all questions that people have when they come to Christianity. And let me ask you, you're a sinner in need of salvation, Jesus died on the cross, rose again on the third day, blah, blah, blah. Are you Christian now? Does that kind of formula address those questions? No, of course not. There's no such thing as microwave Christianity. What there is, and this is the cool part, I'm not saying you shouldn't ask people to become a Christian. But just know, if they say yes, it's not because of what you did, though you're a part of it, an important part of it. It's because God has been preparing their hearts for a long time. And so on one hand, we don't want to engage in microwave Christianity, but we should still ask the question, do you want to become a Christian? And I think asking people, do you want to become a Christian, is such an important question. And what's crazy is, as I've been engaged in ministry more, I've asked those questions at different times, and I've been blown away by how God answers. So a couple of examples. At youth retreat, there was this one time where, and some people were in this small group, actually, where it was like a Sunday night, there was a really emotional presentation of the gospel and talking about a lot of difficult stuff by the speaker. And then afterwards, during our small group, I asked everyone in the group, do you want to become a Christian? And everyone raised their hand. Now, that blew me away. Some of them were already Christian, and some of them had made the decision for the first time, but I did not make them Christian. God had made them Christian, and he had been working in their hearts for a long time. They had been learning about God for a long time, and it was at that moment they decided, but there had been a lot of groundwork that had been done before. All of the hard work had already been done. Other times, when I'm guest preaching, I've gone to CCIC Tri-Valley, for example, and I've presented people with the gospel. Or I've gone to Campus Life, I've presented people with the gospel. Do you want to know God? Do you want to experience God's love? Do you want to know Jesus as your Savior and be free from your sin? And people have responded. And that always blows me away. But here's the thing. We must not look for shortcuts when we share a faith. And the reason that this is so important to me is because I personally am curious about these questions, right? And my story of faith is a story of investigating, okay? Of looking at the claims of Christianity and seeing if they hold up, right? Are they rational? Do they make sense? Is it an emotionally fulfilling life to know God? Is it true? Those are the really crucial questions, and they can't just be glossed over. There are no shortcuts when it comes to this. You need patience in the way that you evangelize. And that's what Paul does. From morning till evening, he expounded to them. Now, he not only is patient, but he attempts to persuade them. So let's keep going. He testifies to the kingdom of God and trying to convince them about Jesus, both from the law and from the prophets. So he not only spends morning till evening, but he tries to convince them. Now, this is really important because in the words try to convince, we can infer that this is not a one-way conversation. Do you guys see how that's true? We can infer that this is not a one-way conversation. And actually, during this time period, the convention was that there would be a dialogue, okay? So if you guys are in college and they make you read, like, Plato has dialogues where these people are talking back and forth with each other, and they ask questions to the people. I'm not making sense. It's a dialogue, not a lecture, okay? So you guys all know what a lecture is. And then a dialogue is where the learner, the listener, is engaged. The learner has the freedom to ask questions and interrupt the speaker. So Paul not only spends a long time, he's not only patient, but he tries to convince them. He invites their questions. And what does he talk about? He talks about Jesus from the law and from the prophets. So earlier, when I was asking the question, how does the God in the Old Testament, who often seems like he's violent and angry, how does that work with Jesus in the New Testament? This is only a very brief answer, but this is a very powerful one. Look at the way Paul uses the Old Testament. Paul finds Jesus there. Jesus is all over the Old Testament. And if you're struggling with that question, why does God look different than the Old Testament? Part of it is because you maybe haven't had enough experience reading the Old Testament. The Old Testament points to Jesus. The New Testament points to Jesus. It's all about Jesus. And that's how Paul uses the Old Testament. But this also means we can't throw away the Old Testament, because Paul treats it with respect, and he sees the importance of it. We can learn things about Jesus in the Old Testament that we wouldn't know if we only had the New Testament. That's a pretty weird statement, right? Because Jesus, the word Jesus Christ, does not appear in the Old Testament. But there are things we learn about Jesus we never could learn without the Old. And Paul convinces them. So microwave evangelism, you don't just give them the spiel and then you expect them to convert. It's a dialogue. So let me give you an example. Some of you came back from the Midwest, a mission trip to the Midwest. A number of people from our church went. And last year I went, and I had one of these kind of conversations with a guy named David. So he was in my small group, and I decided to have a one-on-one with him where we talk about, you know, where he is with God and how he's enjoying the conference. So he was 25 years old, a Princeton PhD economics student. So this is a bright guy, right? And I had this, like, I talked to him for probably about 3 hours, and we were doing this. We were investigating the claims of Christianity and the claims of the Bible. Are these things true? Are they rational? Do they make sense? Are they the best way of understanding our world, the meaning of life, the meaning of existence, the way things are the way they are? And after that long conversation, I learned a lot. He learned a lot. He was still unconvinced. Now, probably like 3 days ago, he Facebook messaged me. And he said, over the past year, some of the books that you recommended to me, some of the podcasts that you recommended to me, I was listening to them, right? I was listening to them. I was exploring and investigating even more the claims of Christianity and Jesus and God. And I was like, wow, that's really, he's really been investigating. He's taking this seriously. And then he said at the end, I'm still not convinced, right? But you can be patient. I can be patient, right? I can wait. I can pray. I can keep trying to convince him. Now, that's frustrating to me because I do want him to know Jesus. But at the same time, to respect him, I need to allow him that time. And we take a long time. Like, we do a lot of, it's funny. I was thinking about, I don't know why, but all of my illustrations have to do with Amazon. So my mom is one of the most thorough internet review researchers that I know, to a degree that is absolutely ridiculous. For example, this Christmas, my mom bought my nephew Asher, who's less than three, like, 1 kabillion gifts. Like, our tree was, there were presents all over the place. And the crazy thing is, I promise you, over the course of buying those gifts, she read every single customer review on Amazon. She read every single customer review on that product, not only on Amazon, but on the entire internet. It's like she will spend 5 hours choosing which $3 car toy to buy. Now, if she spends that amount of time investigating a question like, which car toy should I buy my nephew? I guess he is her grandson. That took me a while, because he's my nephew, so I'm used to calling him my nephew. If it takes me that long to investigate which car toy, which $3 car toy to buy my grandson, how long is it going to take me to investigate the claims of Christianity? This is something that is so important. The most monumental question you can ask in your life: is there God? Is there a meaning to life? Which religion is true? Those are the big questions. And if we are taking that much time to investigate which, like, product to buy on Amazon, then surely, surely we must investigate the claims of Christianity with the same type of thoroughness, right? But often we don't, because we don't have patience. We don't do this. And I don't know. So let's keep on going. I got kind of stuck. That's Paul's persuasion. Let's keep on going to the next point. Let's look at Paul sharing what he knows, God's heart. Okay? So let's read. Keep going. Okay. I'm going to read to you a section, the next section from our passage, and I want you to imagine you're a police sketch artist. As I read the description of these people, I want you to visualize what type of person this is, okay? So I'm going to read some details about what type of person this is. I want you to visualize what type of person this is. So this is from verses 26. The Holy Spirit was right in saying to your fathers through Isaiah the prophet, that's Paul still speaking to them, and then this is an Old Testament quote, and this is the police sketch artist part. Go to this people and say, you will indeed hear, but never understand, and you will indeed see, but never perceive, for this people's heart has grown dull, and with their ears they can barely hear, and their eyes have closed. So what kind of person are you picturing? What's their attitude towards God? It's really interesting. It is not that God has not spoken to them or that God has not appeared. It's that they hear but don't understand. They see but don't perceive. So this is someone who's deaf. This is someone who's blind. And their heart has grown dull. Not only that, this is not just like they don't have the capacity to listen to God, but it's that they actually choose to not listen to God. Look at the end of look at part of verse 27. Their eyes, they have closed. What type of person is this? What type of person is Paul speaking to? He's speaking to people whose hearts are closed. And we can learn something from this. We can learn that the reason we can't do microwave evangelism is because there's something in the human heart that is resistant to God, right? We see it here. And this actually makes a lot of sense. It actually makes a lot of sense to me that people would want to reject God. Do you know why? Because when you're accepting a relationship with God, you are giving up part of your freedom. If you accept a relationship with God as your father, it means that Jesus is your king. Did you hear that? God as your father means Jesus is your king. And when God forgives you, it means that you cannot live the same way that you used to. This is like a relationship with anyone, right? For those of you who are married, do you live the same way as a married person as you did when you were single? Absolutely not. Did you have more freedom when you were single or when you were married? I mean, probably you could do more stuff without consulting with your spouse when you were single, guaranteed, right? You always have to talk to him. You always have to get their input. It's the same way with God, right? You no longer can make unilateral decisions about how do you live your life. God interrupts you. If God is your king, you take you take orders from him. So I can understand why people would want to reject God, why people would not want to listen to him, because he's threatening to us. But at the same time, why do we want to accept God? What's the best reason in the world to accept God, to become a Christian? You see it at the end. God is not giving us orders to add weights to our back. God wants to free us and heal us. So let's keep on going. And this is God's heart for you. This is verse 27. Again, the people Isaiah is speaking to, their hearts are dull. Their ears can't hear. They've closed their eyes. Lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their hearts and turn and I would heal them. Okay? So Paul's audience, he's saying to the Jews that he's talking to, your hearts are hard. Some of you, your hearts are hard. When Paul speaks to them, when Paul spends a long time persuading them, he has a mixed response. He has a mixed response. And when we go out and evangelize, one thing we should expect is a mixed response. Some people will say yes. Some people will say no. Some people will say, I have to think longer. And in all of those, we have to be patient, right? We have to be patient because this is a monumental decision to be a Christian. Your life is different after you make this decision. To say God is your king, it means giving up your rights. But the reason you want to do it is because you know who God is. God is a king, but God is a father. And God wants people to understand. He wants to speak to us so that we would be healed, right? God's not asking us to do these things as a burden. He wants to heal us. And the only way we can receive this healing is by listening to him. So look at the attitude that we can have towards God. We can be hardened towards him. We can close our eyes. We can go, la, 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 I'm not listening, I'm not listening. Or we can say, God, I don't know why you're asking me to do this, but I know that you want to heal me. I know that I can trust you. So I want to listen. And that's God's heart. God's heart is a healing heart. And Paul's heart for these people is a healing heart. So the first issue with evangelism, microwave evangelism. The second issue, what's our heart for the people we speak to? If they don't respond the way we want, what is our heart towards them like? Is it God's heart, which is patient? God waits. This quote from the Old Testament, this quote here is demonstrating God's patience for Israel. Do you know why? The story of the Old Testament is Israel rejecting God over and over and over again. Israel ignoring God over and over again. And yet, in the book of Isaiah, this is like around 600 BC, so there have been like years, hundreds of years, Israel has turned away from God. Yet, God says, the moment you turn to me, the moment you turn to me, I will heal you. That is God's faithful patience for Israel over the Old Testament. And that's another reason that the Old Testament is beautiful. And it's amazing because over and over again, Israel turns away, but over and over again, God doesn't let them go. He says, you are my chosen people. I love you. And the moment you turn, I will heal you and restore you. So that's the reason we can have that same response to God. And that's also the reason we need to be patient. So my friend David, I don't know if he's going to become a Christian, but I'm going to keep on talking to him on Facebook. And it's not a big deal. I can just like message him every once in a while and see how he's doing. And I hope he does become Christian. So let's finish up. That's the heart of God. We see Paul's, the way Paul persuades, we see the heart of God. And then finally, we have this statement at the end. And this is how the book of Acts ends. This is from verse 30 to 31. Paul lived there in Rome 2 whole years at his own expense and welcomed all who came to him. So I'm going to stop there. 2 years. How patient is Paul when it comes to sharing the gospel? He spends 2 whole years welcoming everyone. Now, think about this for a second. A lot of you welcomed people into your house over the holidays, right? Is that kind of stressful? Yeah, I think it's kind of stressful. I always see my mom stressing out about cleaning up the house and so like decorating the tree and everything has to be perfect. Paul welcomes everyone into his home at his own expense for 2 years. And this is the patience that Paul has. So I imagine some of the people who weren't persuaded by him in the first conversation, they probably came back and they're like, Paul, I want to hear more about this. I want to hear more about this Jesus. Who is he? Who is this person that you worship, that you love, that you would follow to the ends of the earth? And Paul would be able to share his faith with them more. This is why we can't do microwave evangelism, because it takes a long time. And then the other thing is, we need to welcome everyone who comes to us, right? If our attitude towards people who are different than us is closed off, then this will always damage our ability to share our faith, right? It will always damage our ability to share our faith. God's salvation is open to all, and you can see that in verse 29. The salvation of God has been sent to the Gentiles. It's not just for Jews, it's for Gentiles. It's not just for religious people. It's not just for people who go to church. It's for everyone. And so we should welcome everyone in. If people have an interest, let's have long conversations with them, even when we have other stuff to do, right? Let's let ourselves be interrupted. Another random, so this is like an attitude, and this is a perspective that you have in the way you live your life. Are you open to people, or are you closed to people? You guys all know what it's like to be at Safeway or whatever, and you're shopping, and you have blinders on because you have a goal. You're going to get your groceries and get out of there. Or you're in school walking from one class to another class, and you have blinders on because you're just walking to the next class. If someone stopped you and you're like, hey, what's up? How's it going? You just say, oh, it's good, and then you would walk on, right? That's being closed to people. But Paul welcomes people in, right? And I've had a lot of really interesting encounters as a result of having this attitude. Sometimes when I wake up in the morning, I think to myself, okay, I pray. I say, God, I want to be open to you wherever you lead me. And I want to be open to the people I encounter. And I've had really weird, interesting conversations with random people. I've had evangelistic conversations with fast food workers. There was an 80-year-old lady at the movie theater on a Thursday afternoon that I talked to for 40 minutes about God. She was the ticket puncher. She was the person who says, oh yeah, your theater is number 5 to the right. I was just carrying a book. I was walking by her, and she's like, hey, oh, you have a book. What are you reading? And it happened to be a Christian book. And she was like, oh, that's weird. Why do you believe in God anyway? And I was able to say to her, like, here are the reasons I believe in God. I believe that when you look at the universe, when you look at the order of the design, like when you look at the orderliness of the universe, the way physics actually works, there's a reason to think there's some kind of intelligence behind it. And then she shared her story. She actually lived through the Great Depression. That's how old she was. It was crazy. But all of this was from my openness to that conversation. And so this is what witnessing looks like. It's a lifestyle. Paul spends 2 whole years welcoming everyone. That's what we should do. So coming out of this book, we looked at Acts chapter 1, verse 8. At the very beginning of the book, God promised, he said, you will be witnesses to Jerusalem, to Judea and Samaria, and to all the ends of the earth. And that same promise is true of us. God says at the very beginning of the book of Acts, you will receive power, you will receive the Holy Spirit, and you will be witnesses. And that's true of us right now. So let's go do it, okay? Let's go be witnesses. And let's not be microwave evangelists, right? Let's be patient with people. Let's allow them space to investigate. And then for those of you who are not yet convinced, you have space here to investigate, okay? So I would love to hear your questions, and there are a lot of people here who I'm sure would love to hear your questions, your concerns, your problems. This is a place where hopefully we can investigate together these claims and these truths. And the more you become convinced, the more you've experienced God's healing, the more you can share with these people. This is how my life has changed because of Jesus.